Hi, this is Debbie Voiles, coach at Mojo for Running, with episode number 133, From Brutal to Boston, a lesson in perspective and preparation. Welcome to the Mojo for Running podcast. I'm the coach, Debbie Voiles, and this is the podcast for middle of the packers, regular people not afraid to work up a sweat, who embrace the outdoors and that wonderful feeling of endorphins surging through their veins. My goal is to provide the information you need to achieve your goals. Today, I want to give you a little insight into a terrible run I had last summer when I prepared for my August marathon and its impact on my marathon a few weeks later. It's a lesson, not about the dreadful run per se, but a much more important lesson, a story that will help when you have a bad run. My situation wasn't at all like the one I mentioned in the last podcast because, well, it was a very long run, but the problem still had nothing to do with nutrition. Anyway, I hope it'll be instructive. As with every mistake I make and have made over the years, I hope it'll be a mistake you don't have to make because I did and told you about it. But more valuable is the lesson I took away about its impact. It's not about why runners sometimes have bad runs, but rather how to put them into perspective and their impact. I guarantee it'll leave you feeling uplifted and encouraged. At least, I sure hope so. This story starts with a critical commitment, followed by serious preparation, and it ends with success. But near the end of the preparation period, I had the worst run of my life, or at least the worst one that I can recall. After 42 years of running, I've probably forgot most of the bad ones. I'd like to say that I don't make mistakes, that I've been running long enough, and that I'm wise enough to know everything I should and shouldn't do, and I'd like to say that I never make bad decisions, that I always do what I should do. But last August, I definitely had a slip-up that I won't soon forget. But the marathon is a real story. We'll get to that. Before I get to the story, just a reminder that this is podcast number 8 of the 12 I promised last summer. So I hope if you haven't gone to my Patreon page and signed up, you will. Even a $1 per episode commitment could make all the difference and keep this podcast going. Just go to patreon.com/coachdeb. I'll put that link in the show notes. Now the story, this story, has two parts. First is the run, my last long run before my marathon last summer. I learned so much from that run, but first, to put it into context, you need to know what happened in the months that led up to that run. In a word, they were spectacular. My training went great. One thing I did, which I'd recommend for anyone, is to stretch out marathon training. Many marathon training schedules cover just a few months or a couple of months, but I think it's optimal to start training 6 months out. That way, you can do more long runs, but have more recovery in between, and this is easier on your body. Anyway, I had had numerous quality long runs during the months of March through early August, and many of them were over the Clearwater Bridges, which is a run my club does the first Saturday of every month. Bridges are the most convenient hill training for us flatlanders here in Florida. So I was doing one long run a month on that route, and whatever the distance, it might include up to 8 bridge crossings, adding to the intensity quite a bit. Like with most people, with every week that passed, with every long run in my pocket, I became more excited and more confident. I had made 2 major changes in the months prior to my marathon. One was that the October before, I had cut way back on carbs and embraced the keto diet. Now, that doesn't mean I ate keto all the time, but I did stay low carb most of the time. I did stay strictly keto in the beginning for a few weeks and lost 10 pounds that had somehow crept up on me. Then, over the next several months, from mid-November through January, through the holidays, I just tried to be reasonable and still enjoy the holidays. During that time, though, I listened to Dr. Jason Fung's book, The Complete Guide to Fasting. And then, after the holidays, I started incorporating intermittent fasting and bone broth fasts into my diet. I explain this because it all played into the success of my marathon. I would have never thought I would have the mental strength to fast more than a day, but after reading that book, I found that I could. But do note that I always consumed copious quantities of bone broth and bulletproof coffee, which provided me with plenty of nutrition. I was doing a bone broth fast once a week, usually for about 36 hours, and during that time, I still trained at the gym or ran whatever miles I was supposed to do that day. And no, I never felt like it negatively affected my running. I also had coffee with cream, which technically means it wasn't much of a fast, but it worked for me. And that's one thing I like about Dr. Funk's book is that he says, do what works for you. Anyway, I'm not trying to convince you that it's the be-all and end-all way of eating. I am a huge believer in intermittent fasting for everybody because I think that's the natural way. And by that, I mean like eating in an 8-hour window every day. But I also believe everyone should figure out what way of eating works for them. And I believe eating only healthy foods and no processed foods, that's the real secret for everybody. No matter what macros work best for you, but everyone has to figure that out. I found that low carb is very effective for me. I was what's called fat adapted after just a few weeks. From then on, anytime I went on a long run, I did not consume more than 15 to 20 carbs the whole morning. Maybe sometimes 25. And I felt strong the whole time, never feeling hungry. The second thing I did differently is that I started going to CrossFit. Now, since CrossFit first became popular about 10 years, maybe more, I was always wary because I heard of many people getting injured. But yet, some people seemed to become extremely fit. And sometimes I'd talk to health professionals, even physical therapists, who either owned CrossFit gyms or worked out there. That gave me a reason to think. It was a medical professional who finally got me to try it, and I will always be grateful for that. I was describing my frustration that I felt like I couldn't accomplish enough on my own or even working with trainers up to that point. I felt like my back and what medical professionals and trainers call my kinetic chain was just too weak, and nothing I had tried made enough of a difference. He said, you need to go to CrossFit. That's exactly what you need. He had hit me with that at just the right time in my life and in my training. When I left his office, I went straight to meet the manager of the one he recommended, and I signed up and trained there 3 days a week for 6 months leading up to my marathon. I'm not pushing CrossFit, but I am pushing you to figure out what you need. Maybe it's Camp Gladiator. Maybe there's just the right trainer in your city. I want you to do whatever you need to do. Seek it out. Get advice from people you respect, from people with credentials. A lot of times, somebody like a physical therapist is a good person to ask. Ask the people that you respect. Maybe it's a sports medicine doctor. Maybe it's a chiropractor. Ask them what they think, who they recommend. There are bad gyms, bad trainers who really don't know their stuff. There are people who say they're trainers and they got their certification in 2 hours on the internet. And they could get you injured, so you have to be careful. There are bad coaches in every sport, but there are so many terrific coaches and trainers who can change your life, who can help you to reach goals that you never thought you could reach. But I advise you to be careful. Progress slowly, get advice, and be sure to check the credentials. Don't just go with anybody. So now you have the backstory that leads up to the worst run of my life and the marathon that followed. In early August, I had my last long run on the schedule, and it was supposed to be on Saturday. I was doing most of my long runs on Saturday throughout my training. But because I'd be leading my club's group run that day and another group run the following day on Sunday, I knew I couldn't possibly get in my own 22-mile run either day, and I really didn't want to wait until Monday and shorten my taper by 48 hours. So I asked my running buddy and BFF, Sandy, early in the week if she'd do the long run with me on Friday instead. She said sure. So all good. Well, all would have been good, but here's the first screw-up. I didn't want to give up my Wednesday CrossFit workout. Throughout those months, I was working out at CrossFit Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, most weeks, and some weeks just on Monday and Wednesday. And the reason I did that was because I wanted to be sure I had reasonably fresh legs for my long run on Saturday. I wanted them to be recovered. But by the time I got up to 22-mile long runs, it was hard to run that far while also hosting the group run. Well, in my stupid, now overconfident brain, overconfident because my training had been going so incredibly well, I believed I could do both, the workout on Wednesday and the long run on Friday. Sadly, and I knew this, to do a CrossFit or any strenuous leg workout 48 hours before a long run is super foolish, but I wanted it to work because I wanted to start my taper. I was ready. I wanted to have my cake and eat it too, but I knew better. I knew I should take it easy on Wednesday. Unfortunately, I didn't. The workout Wednesday included 80 burpees, and I hate burpees. I hate them because they're hard for me, but they're hard for me because I need them. Thursday, all day, I thought about calling Sandy and asking her if it would be okay with her if we save that run until Monday. But I didn't want to wait, and I didn't want to change the plan at the last minute when I was the one who had made the plan. So I went with the guidance of my heart rather than my head. Well, it all started fine. We started at 5 a.m. to beat the heat, and I felt fine for about 11 miles. But at the turnaround point, my legs started to feel super tired. A mile later was the last stop where I could refill the bladder in my hydration pack. But I took it off and shook it, and it sounded and felt full. So I put it back on and proclaimed I was all good. Oh my gosh, that was such a mistake. 2 miles down the road, I went to drink, and it was empty. I still don't know how I misjudged so badly, but I did learn later that I had put the wrong bladder in that pack. So I had a bladder that actually held half as much. The bladder that belonged in that pack was up on the shelf. I had just grabbed the wrong one, and I wasn't thinking. I should have, when I filled it up, I should have seen it was too small, but I don't know. Anyway, the rest of that run contained my most unpleasant running miles ever. In fact, a lot of it wasn't even running. I walked. We walked much of it. I was in need of water, and my legs felt like lead. You've probably had a run, maybe lots of runs over the years, when you suddenly just have to stop and walk. You found yourself saying to your running buddy, "I gotta walk." We've all done that, right? Sometimes you think you're running and you're fine, and all of a sudden you're walking. Every runner's done that, I think. Well, that would have been much better. No, in this case, I was so bad off that on several occasions when we had already stopped to walk, I would say, "I have to sit down." Yes, sit. I'm not kidding. I was that bad off. And I would sit on the grass, just sit there for a few minutes, letting my legs gain a little strength. Now, mind you, by now, because we were much later, because we were going so much slower, because there was walking involved, the summer sun was blazing overhead. To make a long story short, or shorter, we got to a place where I could refill my bladder eventually, but that didn't help my legs. It was the longest run and the most unpleasant of my life, at least the most unpleasant in many years. And the fact that I knew better made it all worse. I should not have done a long run on a stretch of roadway that had no options for water for many miles. And if you live in the Bay Area, you've probably guessed it was the causeway, the Courtney Campbell Causeway. And I should not have done it 48 hours after 80 burpees. Yes, that was the culprit. And we should have started at 4 a.m. Anyway, the problem wasn't that I didn't know better. The problem was that I let what I wanted dictate my actions rather than logic, common sense, and knowledge. I believed I could do that run on that day and it would be okay. I convinced myself. I was overconfident. I had had too many good runs in a row. So the send-off run for my 3-week taper was that dreadful run. Not ideal, but the mistake was made. Now, I want to pause here for a minute because I've heard people explain similar things before. And sometimes what they do is they say, I really didn't want to go into my marathon with a bad run as my last run. So I cut my taper shorter and I did one more long run. Just a little tip. At least I did the smart thing here. I let it go. I started my taper then. I was fine, of course. And my running and my runs during that 3 weeks were all back to normal. The thing that might have derailed some people is that their confidence would have been destroyed. Fortunately, I knew my training, except for that one day, had been great. I would rely on that. Fast forward to race day. Based on my estimates, based on my training paces and speed work, I had calculated that, unbelievably, I shouldn't have any problem qualifying for Boston, which was my goal. You may have assumed, because I do this podcast or because I'm a coach, that I was at some point a great runner or an elite, and that I certainly must have done Boston before in my life. No way. I did not run in high school or college, and I never even placed in my age group until I was in my late 30s. Interestingly, I placed in my age group in a triathlon before I placed in a road race. Anyway, I had run Boston once in 2008, but that was on a charity bib. It was wonderful, but I felt, the whole day, overwhelmed with the desire to officially qualify. But I had never managed it. I had missed it by 2 minutes when I was in the 55 to 59 age group. But for the whole 5 years of 60 to 64, one life crisis or injury after another intervened just enough to disrupt my training cycle. Oh, I did have several marathons that were some decent races, but I couldn't get to that 4:25 qualifying time. Now, in August of last year, I was approaching my 65th birthday, meaning my qualifying time would be 4:44 instead of 4:25, but I would be 65 for the 2019 Boston Marathon. So that meant I would use that qualifying time because I would be 65. I felt like that was quite achievable, and it turned out it was. On race day, I felt great. Fantastic. In the company of my good friends, two runners you'll recognize from the Human Race documentary, Velma Radloff and Diane Bennett, made it all the more exciting. Just for fun, I'll post a few pics and a video they shot at the finish line in the show notes. My race was amazing. By the time I reached 24 miles, I could have walked the last 2 miles and still beat the qualifying time by a whopping 14 minutes. I did back off a bit, but I finished in 4:24 plus something, even good enough to have made the qualifying time in the 60 to 64 age group that I had been trying to hit for 5 years. Of course, that likely wouldn't have gotten me in because of the way they do Boston. You know, you have to actually get under the qualifying time. But anyway, 4:24 gave me a 20-minute cushion. It was a magical day. And to all the people who are sure the keto diet is crazy, I'll say this. On race day, I consumed 24 carbs. 24 carbs from 9 p.m. the night before until after the race. And of course, although I had a few more carbs than usual the day before, I certainly didn't do anything even remotely close to carb loading. I had carbs with me on the run in my fuel belt because I would have absolutely eaten them if I felt my energy flagging, but I never did. I have never felt so good in the last 8 miles of a marathon. It's been months and I'm still amazed. I never got that extra nutrition out of my belt. For fueling, I consumed a salt stick tab or Hammer Endurance, not a salt stick tab, I guess they're really capsules, or a Hammer Endurolite Supreme capsule and a Good Day Energy nugget every 50 minutes or about every 5 miles. And no, I have no relationship with either company, but I knew people would ask me. I like the Good Day Energy nuggets. I call them that, but because I don't know what to call them. They look like an M&M and they're chocolate and but they're made with all organic ingredients. They don't have any weird things in them. but they do contain caffeine, but just a little, and they make it possible for me to have a nice steady dose of caffeine, but not like an energy drink, just a little, 20 milligrams per hour, and they have B vitamins. And of course, the electrolytes were key as well. But the those little Good Day Energy, I don't know if I think they call them bites. Those just have the B vitamins and the 20 milligrams of caffeine. But the capsules that I was taking had the electrolytes. So the two of them worked really well. I had used this combination on all my long runs and found it to work well. Again, I'm not saying this will work for everyone, but many endurance athletes are finding that it works for them. I do encourage you, as I have in the past, to experiment with your nutrition to discover the best combination of macros for you. Start with when you're doing the 10-mile long runs. Every single long run, you need to pay attention to what you have for breakfast, or if you have breakfast, to what you had the day before, to how much you drank the day before, to what your electrolytes were the day before, to what you had in the morning. Did you have coffee? Did you put sugar in it? Did you eat anything else? Always pay attention and then think about, study what happens during the run. How did you feel? Did you have enough energy? Did you get sick to your stomach? How did you feel when you finished? All of that is part of marathon training. I credit my great run to the new diet, to being down by that time 20 pounds due to that diet, to CrossFit Safety Harbor, to a great, gradual, smart training schedule, and to my training buddy, Sandy Graham, who shared all the long miles with me and that one dreadful long run. She always keeps me entertained. That brutal, horrible, terrible, dreadful last run was nothing but that, a horrible training run. It in no way was indicative of how I do in my goal race or of my overall fitness. So there you have it. On Patriots Day, in a couple of months, I'll run the Boston Marathon because this time I qualify and I can't wait. That kind of goes hand in hand with the message of our documentary film, The Human Race, which is that at any age is the right age to run. But I would add to that, that not only should you never feel you need to stop running or that you're never too old to start, but you should continue to strive to reach new goals. You just never know. I know lots of people who became runners in their 50s and 60s and went on to have great success and run many marathons. Some of them had never run until their 60s, and yet they ended up doing Boston. Never give up and never stop setting those goals. Never sell yourself short. You might be shocked at what you can do. Now, I hope that helps you put your bad runs in perspective and move on. I may be 65, and I may have been running 42 years, but I still keep learning. Now, one more reminder to hop over to my Patreon page, patreon.com/coachdeb. Also, I hope you'll give this podcast a rating. You can do that right on your iPhone now, or your, I guess, whatever kind of phone or whatever podcast app you use. Usually, there's a place for you to just click a number of stars, and that would really, really be great if we could get those numbers up. Anyway, please follow me on Instagram at RunTampa and at MojoForRunning. And remember, I do have an online coaching program for people aiming for their first 5K, first 10K, or first half marathon. The fee for that is just, at this time, $55 for a whole year. You can find that by going to coaching.mojoforrunning.com.